Welcome to Chit Chat Stocks. On this show, hosts Ryan Henderson and Brett Schaefer analyze businesses and riff on the world of investing. As a quick reminder, Chit Chat Stocks is a CCM Media Group podcast. Anything discussed on Chit Chat Stocks by Ryan, Brett, or any other podcast guest is not formal advice or recommendation. Now please enjoy this episode.
Welcome to Chit Chat Stocks. This is our weekly investing power hour, and we've got a lot on the slate today. Lots of news in the financial world. We're going to be talking about the Trump Media IPO or SPAC, which has, I'll just say it right out of the gate, a ludicrous valuation. We're going to talk about who is really winning in AI, because it might surprise you. And Brett's got a bunch of other fun items, and he's maybe going to talk through a little bit of his watch list as well, and who he has on there. But before we kick things off, I should say we go live every Thursday at 9:30 on the West Coast, 12:30 Eastern Standard Time on YouTube. If you want to check them out, you can ask questions there. It's always fun to get a little interaction with the audience. And we repost them on Sundays, and we have our newsletter as well, which is totally free. So if for any reason you feel compelled to sign up to another newsletter, the Chit Chat Stocks Substack is a great one to have. And like I said, totally free. So with that said, before we get into things, I want to talk about our friends, our sponsor, the all-in-one investing platform, Public.com. They recently launched options trading, and this is your final reminder that you can get a rebate of 18 cents on every contract traded. All you have to do is lock in your lifetime rebate, is activate options by March 31st. It's simple. Create a public account, activate options, and you're set for life. Then every time you trade options on Public, you'll earn 18 cents per contract. Plus, unlike other investing platforms, there are no commissions or per contract fees. So instead of paying big fees to place options trades, you actually get something back. Get your lifetime rebate of 18 cents on every options contract traded, but hurry, you only have until March 31st at public.com. So if you're listening to this on Sunday, March 31st, you need a little bit of a sense of urgency here because it's the last day. This is paid for by Public Investing. You must activate your options account by March 31st for revenue share. Options are not suitable for all investors and carry significant risk. Full disclosures are in the podcast description. U.S. members only. Brett, what do you want to talk about this week?
Well, I have some interesting tidbits. If the watch list is not as exciting, I am going to talk about the SBF sentencing, which, for anyone that didn't know, happened right before we recorded, lucky enough. And we're going to talk about a fund going long Bitcoin but short MicroStrategy in what looks like potentially a very interesting arbitrage trade. So that's on the docket this week, along with some classic AI stuff.
All right. Well, I think maybe the most exciting thing to start with would be the Trump Media IPO / SPAC. And so I'll maybe kick things off here. But this was, have you looked at this at all?
A little, but I don't necessarily know what the business does at all. Maybe it doesn't do much. It seemed to me like it's a bit of a meme stock cryptocurrency type deal where it's betting off of vibes, but why don't you get into the details?
Yeah, that is pretty much exactly what it is. And typically when I hear about these things, I kind of just, I don't know. There's always something else coming out in the world of finance that is like a bit of a meme and not really actionable from my point of view, my perspective. I'm not trying to really short anything. So all I really do is look for stocks that I want to own. And typically these things, just purely on a cursory glance, I say absolutely not. So however, this time I found this hilarious, probably one of the best parody buy ratings I've ever seen. It's like, for anyone that doesn't know, analysts at big investment banks, they write, it's kind of like the same blueprint every time, but they do like a buy initiation or a buy signal, buy rating kind of thing. And then they give a reasoning for why. And Financial Times Alphaville, which is I don't know if it's like always parody, but it's sort of parody financial media.
Yeah, I think it's more analysis, opinion, maybe.
Kind of. They wrote a fake buy rating on this, and it has just some of the funniest language I've seen, and I'll go through some of that. But to give a little bit of a background here on what actually happened, for those that don't know, Donald Trump, the former president of the United States, has a company that built Truth Social, which is a social media platform, and it isn't very big. So the financials came out, and I guess I should also mention that Donald Trump himself is not actually the CEO. He's the chairman of the board, so he's not running the company, but he is, for all intents and purposes, the face of it. Well, they joined the public markets via a special purpose acquisition corp. I think the SPAC originally, the shell, was called Digital World Acquisition Corp. And they've now switched to, I think the ticker is TMTG. It's DJT for Donald Trump. And if you go through the financials, I will pitch them to you, Brett, and you tell me what you'd pay for this. Over the last 9 months, $3 million in revenue, primarily, I believe it's almost all from advertising. And that was, just to reiterate, $3 million, not with a B. So that is small just in terms of like public companies in general.
That's full year.
That's 9 months.
Okay. Well, hey, just nine.
And it's growing. It is growing. It's quite the acceleration, but it's also going into election time. So as you'd expect, advertising revenue is kind of jumping on that platform. But $3.4 million in 9 months. Operating losses, they're spending about $7 million on research and development, another $6 million on general and administrative expenses. So they're losing about $10 million in through their operations. However, and this is the part I found kind of funny, they are spending on that $3 million in revenue over the last 9 months. They are spending $38 million on interest expense.
Really? Ooh.
Which, if for anyone that's followed Trump's financial career, his history, he has used debt in the past and been not afraid of high interest rates. So I guess it isn't too surprising. I'm curious what the structure is on that, who's giving him, who he's paying the interest rate or the interest to. But basically losing $50 million over the last 9 months in net losses. But so I guess, what would you pay for that?
I would get paid not to own it. Yeah, I think negative amount. I could get paid not to own it, I think. If someone said you had to pay me, or like, okay, I had to give $100 and I could either own this. Obviously, it's, it's a limited liability. I can't like lose money more than I put in. But the value of this thing at this moment doesn't seem very high. And have you talked about where the stock is trading at right now?
So it went public this week. The market cap of Trump Media and Technology Group is $8.4 billion. That is just over 2,000 times price to sales. I think that is the most expensive stock I've personally ever seen, and it's not particularly close. There may be some pre-revenue SPACs that caught a bid as well, but for a business that's actually generating revenue, that is the most expensive multiple or valuation I think I've ever seen.
Would you call this pre-revenue though? I guess they've been operating for a little bit here.
It's not pre-revenue.
the business has been out for a while. I just tried to look up the stock price, although Google comes up with Dow Jones if you search it, but I did come up with an article from the Wall Street Journal. Why it's so hard to know what Donald Trump's DJT stock is worth. Yeah, it's really hard to figure out how much it's worth, guys. This seems like just an ultimate meme stock. It seems like the ability to, because when you look at these crypto traders, they come up with these names for things. Sometimes they're quite offensive. I guess not all the times, but the point of making them is that the whole thing is just the name is nonsensical, you know, Shiba Inu coin, Dogecoin, all that stuff. And they want to create some weird little narrative online. And I think with this one, it's similar where you don't have to, you know, it's on the public markets and it's all a narrative. It's all a trading sardine. And I think these people that love trading crypto, love trading single day options, all that stuff that's been popular the last few years, you can see why this one has turned into a quite the meme stock.
Yeah, and I'm gonna read a part of this fake buy rating from AlphaVille that was posted, and it's pretty hilarious. So
I said we had someone that said fake alias just joined and said came in and just heard 2,000 price to sales. LOL. Yeah, that's a great way to
bubble. It's back.
Come in. Yeah. Yeah. And for anyone that is just listening to the podcast, if you want to join the YouTube, you can ask us questions. We'll talk about really whatever you ask, as long as it's investing related.
Okay. So here's a little snippet. There's basically four, the title of the buy rating is "You Can Handle the Truth" in reference to Truth Social. And then there's four like elements to his thesis, and it's, like I said, it's satire, but this last one is new paradigms and meme to politics. So it says Trump media has reported $3.3 million in revenue between the first quarter of 2023 and the third quarter of 2023 was generated exclusively from advertising on Truth Social, a social media website that appears to have only one active user. Scaling this opportunity to match Twitter's December 2022 active user count of 368 million indicates annual revenue exceeding $1.2 billion. Basically, he's saying that it appears Trump himself might be the only active user. And based on the current advertising spend to user ratio, if it grows, there's some promise there.
That's a valuable user, you got to say.
That is. And you know what? Yeah. People will laugh about this, especially in the financial community, and it deserves some laughs. But if you're like a fund trying to raise money, this guy knows how to do it. He can raise money with the best of them. And here's my other question. If for someone who is buying this, do you think they think about it basically as a donation to Trump? Or do you think that
maybe,
it's people that think it'll go up?
Yeah. And I'm fascinated to follow the story from all the ways that, okay, there's just a lot of capital that's been pumped into this thing, like how it's going to be used, you know, for campaign contributions, all that stuff. I want to know where the money is flowing and stuff. It's just going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out, the legal battles, all that stuff. But I guess that's less of an investing strategy from this company at this moment. It's pure meme stock. The one company it reminds me of is Tilray back in the cannabis bubble, when traders wanted to get it up to a price to sales ratio of 420, which was, if you look back at that time, people were saying that the markets were nonsensical. There was a lot of just nonsensical lore going around in the cannabis bubble. That was in 2018. And if you told them what things would be like in 2024, you would say, I don't know if they would believe you. And I guess it comes back to, you know, we're going to talk about shorting overpriced stocks later in this episode, or potentially overpriced stocks, I should say. And it's quite dangerous, because what do you do with this thing? Can you? I don't even know if you can short it at this point.
Yeah, I would guess. Well, here's another snippet from that fake report. He said, okay, let me see this. Some 60% of Trump media shares are held by a single NWI who has never previously had documentary evidence of great wealth. This creates a substantial disincentive to value crystallization of the holding. Here's the part that I find funny. Additionally, a percentage of the stock is shorted by parties colloquially known as Trump haters. While these parties represent a risk to the sentiment-based investment case, yeah, they may become much less vocal after November 5th, if you get our drift.
The the ultimate battleground stock. This could be. Yeah. I can't wait for people to really misunderstand how stocks work and stuff like that. Because this is going to be talked about in the broader news.
Are you surprised Trump didn't do this earlier? It just seems it felt like the perfect way for him to raise money, if that was the goal. And especially during like the bubble of, well, I guess it was kind of bad timing because it was after the election, but.
Yeah, I think back then, I'm guessing they didn't need the money. Now they do.
Yeah, that's true. It just feels like it makes it so accessible for people to donate to him. I just thought it would have been an easy way for them to do it.
It's tricky, though.
True.
Right? It's not necessarily a charity. Yeah, we have a comment here. I wonder if all future candidates are going to use these shell companies. To raise campaign funds.
There is technically a business here.
Yeah, there is.
So it's not like they're just like, I don't know. It's not like they're just, well, they kind of are, but it's not like they're offering nothing. There is some sort of a business here, and it would in any other universe be a micro cap social media business, but it's what I'm saying is, you have to have something to offer, I think. Well, maybe you don't, but you should.
It's like the South Sea Bubble, a venture with great promise that you need to invest in.
Exactly.
What was I going to say?
Should we talk about our old friend, Sam Bankman-Fried?
Yeah, let me get to my topics. Thank you for everyone that's joining in. Got a lot of comments here. Oh, I was going to finish things off. If you are the SEC, you were just sitting here looking at that thing, DJT, and going, oh man, why do we have to deal with this? Why does this exist for us? Because that is just, who wants to touch that? I'd probably quit, honestly. I'm touching that thing.
No. And it is going to be political.
I think it might be underreported on, but we'll see. Maybe it turns into be nothing. Okay.
You think? I'll tell you what. I was trying to follow the SEC filings, and it was very confusing. Part of that's just because of it being a SPAC, but it's very convoluted and difficult to follow.
Someone's going to figure it out. It's not going to be me. Everyone's just going to read what they wrote and go, oh, okay, I understand it now. But someone needs to simplify what's happening. All right, let's move to the next thing. We have, and I mean, this has been a fantastic week for news. I didn't even know Sam Bankman-Fried was getting sentenced today, but I found that out, I think, 2 days ago. It was kind of flying under the radar. And I had the topic as a tracker because right when we were preparing our notes, it was unclear when he was going to get his sentencing. And then there was a nice little live tweet from the, I think, press reporter from the city of New York. I'll actually put this right in the chat here for anyone wants to check that out on the replay. And I think what was going on today is the final arguments for the sentencing. So they were going to decide, you know, whether it was 10, 20, life sentence, stuff like that. And you got both sides of the legal defense, including SBF himself, giving their case. And I think this is SBF's lawyer giving this take to the judge. And so think about it. This is in a courtroom, and they're trying to make their case of how much this person should go to prison for. And this is what the person said. And I'm reading this verbatim. He's an awkward math nerd. He's into veganism. He has an off-the-chart intellect. He is a beautiful puzzle. He can parse words better than a Talmudic scholar. He was a billionaire, unconcerned about material possessions. What are that? That's a. I don't even know what I just read. I don't know what that is.
I love how people throw like veganism in there too. Like it makes it that much more quirky.
I know. Like, that's me too. I don't. That has nothing to do with my personality. It's like, no, yeah. You know. It's but my favorite was, he's a beautiful puzzle. Like, what is this? Some romance novel? Like, this is like, I don't know. Maybe Michael Lewis fed it in there, which I think that book now needs quite a few.
Isn't it sad that Michael Lewis now, to me, it doesn't feel like he went from hero to zero for me. I used to think like, wow, what a financial writer, what a financial journalist. And
I'm looking a little more skeptically at all of his reporting. One, the high frequency trading like scandal he tried to report. I kind of think that's a nothing burger. Two, the blindside people. And we don't have to go into a Mike Lewis thing. Turned out to be bad people, the blindside. I don't know.
That I think that's up recently. In the air, just to be clear.
It's up, in, the up air, in the air, but I don't know. I read the reporting, and I guess if you had to land one way, they seem like they didn't treat the guy well. And then like Moneyball and stuff. It didn't even work that well. Like the Athletics were terrible. Now they have to move to Vegas. But that's besides the point. Let's get back to SPF. The judge decided to sentence him for 25 years, which seemed pretty standard to me. And we already saw some crazy takes out there, Ryan. We had some person saying, no names, that it is shocking that he got 25 years when FTX recovered 100% of the customer's assets. And then someone, this is when you just don't tweet. Or you just kind of retweet the news or retweet people because you can come up with something that you may look back and say that was a terrible take. But there was a reply to this tweet that said, if I tried to shoot you and I missed, do I still go to prison? I think that exemplifies it. It's like,
that is kind of funny.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts here? I feel
Did
like
they recover 100% of assets?
I think so. And I think part of it was Anthropic. They invested in Anthropic and Anthropic's absolutely mooning.
Oh, interesting. And I think that's – so Jeff Bezos may have bailed out PFT – or not PFT.
SBF.
SBF. Because I believe Anthropic – didn't they get the investment from Amazon that like shot up the valuation, which shoots up the ownership stake from SBF?
Yeah, so that's Amazon, but Bezos is investing in Perplexity. You got to get your AI startups straight. There's a billion of them, and they're all apparently worth $50 billion.
But, well, Bezos specifically, but Bezos, through his ownership in Amazon, you know, it's just one way or the other. But,
true.
Okay, so 25 years, I don't know. Maybe it seems suitable.
Fine.
I think what happened here is just gross misconduct and lapse of a complete – like dereliction of responsibility, just an unwillingness to recognize how important what he was doing was and how many people relied on him, how many people had money in what he was doing. So yeah, I think he hurt a lot of people in the process. So to me, yeah, there's, I think obviously some time in jail seems suitable.
Yeah, for sure. And what's interesting is that during his speech today, and I'm just reading the transcript, but it seemed like he didn't really have remorse. He was trying to argue that there was recovering of assets. He was like, it was temporary illiquidity. And he was like, sir, my expected value to society is still positive. It's like, dude, you already got convicted. Like this is, like the sociopathic behavior is interesting to see live. And I guess, you know, it's disappointing that he's going to be behind bars, but maybe he'll be like another, let's say, ambitious individual without trying to get any legal trouble here. Billy McFarland over at, what is that called? Firefest, who from prison tried to start a podcast. Did you hear about this?
No.
And then he got sent into like the hole or something. Because he was trying to use the prison phone to record a to record a podcast from prison. You gotta hand it to Billy. Billy's way
more effort in than we are to record the podcast.
Yeah, he's McFarland is much more whimsical and I think enjoyable to watch.
Well, he knows that he's a bit of a meme.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think SBF necessarily recognizes that. SBF in another career, maybe no one would look at him as a meme. People would think like, oh, he's a bright guy, maybe a little strange, but generally bright. I think too many people told him he was this brilliant, wonderful, everything he's doing is right.
Beautiful even, puzzle.
Even if he's committing crimes, the expected value, maybe if he donates the money from crimes to charity, it's okay.
What's weird is that he just donated him to both political parties. And it's like, that's like a negative expected value, man.
That's like a great way to win clout, though.
I guess that's true. That's true. Maybe in reality, he just wanted to get crypto legalized. But
okay,
we want to go to another topic.
Yeah, I want to talk about this. This is maybe a little more actionable here in terms of investment, trying to build a portfolio around it. So who is really winning in AI? This, I found this absolutely fascinating. With all the AI startups, everything going on, all the, dare I say, extreme valuations for some of these AI startups. Here's a tweet from a guy named Peter. His at is literally just Peter. It says, kind of wild that one of the companies with the most revenue from generative AI is a consultancy. Accenture, this quarter, for the second quarter, fiscal 2024, says generative AI new bookings of over $600 million in the quarter for a total of $1.1 billion through the first half of the fiscal year. That is more revenue than a lot of the generative AI businesses. So the company that's winning in generative AI is Accenture. And I'm guessing a lot of the other consultants as well.
Good business. That's a good business right there. I believe the stock is a hundred bagger. I also believe it's one of Terry Smith's favorites, right? When we covered, or that could have been someone else that we've been looking at as a super investor. But either way, yeah. Oh, no, it's not a hundred bagger. It went public in 1998. Stock's up 1,700%. So still pretty good. I'm sure there might be, yeah, there's probably, I'm missing the total return there.
Talk for a second because I'm going to pull up Accenture here on FinChat to show some people some charts.
Okay, so what I'm looking at here, I guess my first thought is with all of these giant numbers with either spending or revenue, one person spending is another person's revenue, is where is the ROI? Because I see, and I think it was an example of one of these firms, it was either McKinsey, Ernst & Young, Accenture, I guess, could be tossed in there, where you have, I think it was like 10,000 purchases of Microsoft Copilot. Yeah, at a big discount, but those were, the labeled price is $30 a month for this thing. So you're spending, even if it's, bought down to like $10 a month, you're spending all of this money on putting out AI tools. And I don't know what the end game is here. At this point, I guess Accenture and some of these other consultancy and contract work businesses are extremely good at taking what's popular, building a sellable product around it, and getting a lot of companies, if they're like, hey, we need an AI strategy, they're going to the chief marketing officer, they're going to the chief product officer, and they're saying, look, we can help build this for you. They're very good at that. It's a great business, but my thought is, what's the actual ROI going to be here? Because as we sit, and Ryan's using some beautiful charts here from our good friends at FinChat, as we sit here, the amount, I'm not seeing like the actual use cases in the real world yet outside of the existing big tech players.
Yeah, I don't think I've been working at a large company enough to maybe, or maybe even a smaller company long enough to know like the role of consultants, like how valuable they can be. I guess if you view it as like service work in some degree, like temporary services where I guess, for example, like maybe you could like hire a recruiter or something. If you're a smaller company, yeah, you can't do it yourselves. I'm sure there's the role. It's very important in certain places, but I just don't understand how within a quarter, a company that's been around for however long could all of a sudden become AI experts and start True. Charging for consulting fees on that, that what they just hired all the AI experts in the world within a quarter. And now they're generating $600 million in bookings. That's
Oh yeah. I have no doubt that Accenture and all these other companies are extremely good at playing the consulting and the contract and the services game. They've shown that time and time again, but my gripe is just with the companies that I might own in my portfolio that are paying consultants to try to build these AI tools and then using these AI products that are extremely expensive. We have a comment here. Don't worry, guys. Match Group is able to buy 100 ChatGPT licenses, so the revenue is definitely coming. Yeah, the revenue is coming for GPT. I can never say that right. And this is actually, I would say, a perfect example of what I would be worried about is you have a company like Match Group buying into the hype. They're buying these ChatGPT licenses. They're probably going to spend relatively a good amount of money on this overall AI strategy. And then if we look 3 years later, you better get a darn good ROI on that spend, or else they're going to say, look, we're going to scrap this. We got to cut this. They're going to cut it. And that's where the AI spend is coming from today, is these enterprise clients saying, yeah, we're willing to spend $10, $50, $100 million on AI tools. And yeah, Accenture is winning in that right now. And I have no doubt that they pivoted many times before. They have all these different things that they're willing to offer their corporate clients. I've no doubt they'll be fine. But from an AI sense, I just worry that they're... That part specifically is a little bit of a bubble.
Yeah, I agree.
You mentioned another winner in AI. I will open up Anthropic, I guess, is related to this. So we saw this week that Amazon has decided to invest $2.75 billion more in the AI startup Anthropic, competitor to OpenAI. And they're doing it in the way that all these companies are these days without actually acquiring the company, but giving them a boatload of money and taking a huge minority stake. And they mentioned here that with these big cloud providers, here's the quote. As part of the collaboration between the two companies, Anthropic has been using Amazon's custom chips to build and deploy AI software. Amazon has added Anthropic's technology into its cloud business offerings, allowing companies to create their own AI applications. After Amazon's initial investment, Anthropic, which had used both Google and Amazon's cloud services, said it would use Amazon's cloud for the majority of its workloads. I think if you own any exposure to the cloud companies, you have plenty of exposure to AI. Because AWS seems so well positioned, especially with the custom chip business. I mean, who outside of Azure and Google Cloud can compete with them anymore in the West? And Google itself is competing in AI, so no one wants to go to them.
I don't know. That the relationship between Anthropic and Amazon just feels a little strange to me. Like, we'll give you, I think it's more than $4 billion now, to rely exclusively on AWS to give us revenue and also use our chips. So it's like we're giving you money to give back to ourselves, and then maybe we can deploy some of your features, applications to AWS developers or whatever, so that they can, because they do have and I think I'm probably maybe simplifying this too much, but they said, what's it called, what's the AWS thing, Code Whisperer, I think is what it's called, where it's like helping developers kind of automate some of their processes. So
speed up coding.
Yeah. Like giving them recommendations, which as a non-developer, I would think that would be valuable, but I'm really not sure. So it's like when you're sending that email in Gmail and they every once in a while, they'll fill it out for you with their recommendation or whatever for what to say. I think it's basically that, but for development, that would be my simple guess, which seems like it would be very useful.
Yeah, I think so. And I think this relationship is extremely similar to OpenAI and Microsoft, because they're doing something where they're basically not acquiring them, but acquiring them, because any acquisition these days is just impossible for these big tech companies to make. So I wonder if there's going to be a regulatory crackdown using these loopholes, because they seem to be quite aggressive with them. But I think you mentioned the consulting businesses being a winner in AI. Accenture is just booming with this revenue. I think the cloud businesses as well. Even if there's a temporary bubble in spending over the long term, it's pretty easy to see through the chip development, through the expanding capacity, further economies of scale, how these cloud providers are going to just expand their moats to, how would you even think about competing with these three companies today? GCP, Azure. Yeah, maybe add an Oracle. You have some niche players in there too. But
you know who said they would? Trump Media Group.
Remember the
prospectus for Digital World Acquisition Corp, when they said like, this is our target, and it said like, here's Truth Social, here are the companies it had all the logos of all the cloud providers. It's like, we'll take all these markets.
Yeah, well, the cloud providers are too woke, Ryan, so they can't have them.
And I mean, they do have the power to cut off a lot of business potentially.
That's true.
But that's because it's really difficult to replicate what they've built, so it's hard to replace that leverage. Although we did talk about FinChat there, so I want to give a shout out and a little message for anybody who doesn't use a research terminal. I do recommend checking out FinChat. They're doing 2 weeks free right now. So you sign up, you get FinChat Pro for free for 2 weeks, and you can at least test it out and see how valuable it is. I know in my experience, I was a little reluctant to pay for anything. And then I realized the time that it actually saved me in doing all the research and how quickly I can develop at least some cursory understanding of a business. It's all there, and they're building out a lot of the additional functionality to do research on the companies. Like, they've got all the conference call transcripts and all the earnings releases and everything within the actual company page. So I recommend checking it out. Just go sign up. You get 2 weeks of FinChat Pro for free, and you can figure out whether or not you really like it. And if you do, you can use our code finchat.io/chitchat. That is finchat.io/chitchat. You get 25% off. We got a lot of questions on Boston, Omaha here.
We got a question from Tyler saying, why do people like Boston, Omaha so much? That is another good question.
I think for a lot of the same reason that we like Nelnet, it's a conglomerate in Nebraska, and you can draw some parallels to another successful conglomerate based in Nebraska. For anyone who doesn't know what I'm referring is Berkshire Hathaway. There's some family relationship to Warren Buffett. I think he's like the nephew or something. Great nephew.
I think, well, yeah, since Buffett sold, great nephew. All right. Yeah. And the stock hasn't done well, but to be fair, it could be very cheap right now. I'm trying to pull it up very quickly. I think it's trading below book value, which could be interesting given that they have some stuff in there that probably shouldn't even be valued at book value. Yeah, 0.9% book, 0.9 times book. Now, we haven't looked at the earnings. I can say pretty confidently that Ryan hasn't either, but let me just read them out for you. Kind of give a first glance here, maybe just go through the top line numbers. We have, for fiscal year ending December 31st, 2023, billboard rentals, $43 million. In revenue versus $39 million in 2022. Broadband services, $35 million versus $28.6 million in 2022. Premiums on insurance, about $14 million versus $10.6 million in 2022. Insurance commissions, about flat. Investment income, $2 million. I mean, they have a lot of depreciation and amortization, which leads to a stated net loss, total equity went up. So book value went up from $514 million to $600 million. It's tough because they're investing so much into fiber. I think that's a complicated industry. I think one of the reasons why Boston Omaha is down is because you can look at the share prices of Charter. People are worried about broadband at the moment.
Did you take a look at the Sky Harbor position? Like, I mean, not the position, but have you looked at that business at all?
I looked at it late last year and saw that they were making progress, but it's still fairly early stage. So that could be interesting. Yeah, it's just like, okay, if they're not generating a lot of cash flow yet, which they aren't, and they might be getting good returns on that investment because they're putting so much into fiber. If they're not buying back a ton of stock, if they're not seeing huge growth from their Sky Harbor position, I don't know if anyone should expect the stock to go up just because your sum of the parts is higher. So, yeah.
Hear me out. What do you think of this? The Adam Peterson is on the board of Nelnet. What do you think of Nelnet acquiring Boston Omaha?
Little merger, and then we just take out Allo Communications again. I think that wouldn't make sense because they're just two entirely different businesses trying to build up each one is building up separate business muscles, where Boston Omaha doesn't really focus on financials. And Nelnet's essentially like a bank, and they have a totally different process there. So the only thing that overlaps would be the Allo Communications position, which is a fiber position. But Nelnet only owns about half of that now. So that would also not make sense because they're not operating that business unit anymore. I don't think a merger makes sense.
Okay, talk about this long Bitcoin, short MicroStrategy thing.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's get into some fun stuff here. So, for anyone that doesn't know, Bitcoin has been mooning. Let me actually just check the price here. I think it's above 70K. Bitcoin, come on, Google. I thought you were supposed to be good at AI. Oh, shit, it's in Costa Rica. Whatever, it's close to all-time high. I think it's above 70,000. It's in the Costa Rica currency. Either way, we have a, I would call, spicy report out today from Carisdale Capital Group. I would say they have big, they're being bold about saying something like a lewd term there. And they said in a tweet with an attached report, "Good morning, everyone." Do you think that was a little, it said just GM. Do you think that was a little tease at the Bitcoin people? "We're short MicroStrategy and long Bitcoin. Report available at Carisdale Capital, blah, blah, blah. Crypto trades often get carried away, and MicroStrategy is no exception. The Bitcoin price implied in MicroStrategy shares is now over 177,000 USD, an unjustifiable 2.5 times-ish the spot price of Bitcoin." And they go on to say that people have this logic. There's a reason to own MicroStrategy because there's no management fees on the Bitcoin holdings, that they're really smart with taking out equity and stuff like that to buy shares at the right time. Or excuse me, not shares, Bitcoins. And they, I mean, for one, the fee thing doesn't make any sense anymore because the Bitcoin ETFs have very, very low fees. And two, and here's a quote from them, "But we find this logic very flawed. Leverage cuts both ways. And while MicroStrategy has succeeded in increasing the amount of Bitcoin held, the impact of massive dilution has also kept the amount of Bitcoin per share virtually unchanged in recent years." So they're not, I think what you're saying there is that this should, or excuse me, what they are saying there is that really this should just be a price betting on Bitcoin. So there's not extra value actually being created. And again, given the high premium of MicroStrategy on of their Bitcoin holdings. I guess maybe for context for people that don't know what MicroStrategy is, it's essentially a company that was a niche software business that took on a bunch of debt, bought a bunch of Bitcoin. When the price of Bitcoin went up, they sold stock to buy more Bitcoin. They're essentially a Bitcoin holding company now. And the fact that they're trading at 2.5 times the quote unquote net asset value of their Bitcoin is why Carousdale is going to go short MicroStrategy, long Bitcoin. Apparently, it's not that hard to get, you know, a short position in MicroStrategy. You don't have to pay insane borrow costs, all that. Although I'm not a shorting expert. I kind of just asked around on that one. It's interesting. It's already working today. Bitcoin's up and MicroStrategy is down 10%. What could go wrong here? Do you like this trade? Because I feel like it's not that risky if it's small enough position.
Yeah, but couldn't you just do the short MicroStrategy without the long Bitcoin?
Well, here's the thing. What if Bitcoin doubles?
Ah, yeah. Then MicroStrategy could still have a little. I like it.
I think it's an interesting. It's definitely spicy for a professional. I wouldn't. Don't do this for an individual. We're not doing this. Do not do this. definitely have some experience before you do this. But makes a little bit of sense to me. It's probably dangerous, probably a little risky, but small position size. I'd say it's an interesting way to play, especially if you got the S&P at 28, 29 times earnings. A lot of stuff seems overvalued or premium valuation. Yeah. Like, where does this go wrong?
Well, maybe there's just like irrational fans for MicroStrategy that are willing to bid it up. It's kind of like, what was it? Hempton quote, like, it's like shooting fish in a shorting at this time is like shooting fish in a barrel. And every time, every once in a while, they shoot back.
That's true. Like, they could go to five times the Bitcoin value if there's some sort of short squeeze or, yeah.
Talk about your watch list a little bit. I've got some background noise here, so I'm going to be a listener for a little bit to not destroy the audio for everyone.
Yeah, I can't hear it too much, but I know that it's a lot easier to hear background noise when you have the headphones on. Yeah, let me hit the listener questions first before I've been tossing out some stuff on Twitter/X to try to get some questions before we record. And I know one of these people is on here already, but let me hit these first and then maybe we'll go to the watch list after. First one is, and I think this is an interesting one, probably one that's impossible for anyone to answer, but it's fun to discuss. How do you identify value stocks versus a value trap? Said PayPal, Chegg, Match, Intel, or any others you wish to highlight as examples? Well, I would say that we are not experts in avoiding value traps because we lost some money in Match Group. But I think in general, and you're never going to be entirely right on any, if you're kind of a value stock trying to fade, be a contrarian investor type person, you're not going to get 100% bets right. But I thought about this before we recorded because I saw this question. I think my answer would be you're going to see the stock fall for some reason. It has to fall for some reason. Usually there's a narrative out there. For example, we just mentioned Charter. There's a narrative that they're not going to grow their subs again. There's a narrative that there's oversaturation, inflationary costs. I'm not an expert on the industry, but generally there's those and probably some others as well. If you're going to buy the dip on Charter, you're making a bet that the narrative is wrong over the long term, but the short-term headwinds are not. Like, for whatever reason, there's going to be a reversal in the key performance indicators. And you have to have some sort of conviction when everyone is saying that it's not, like, what everyone's saying, it's going to keep continuing in the bad direction, that's going to reverse. I mean, you mentioned PayPal here. I'm one that kind of thinks it's a value trap. There's a lot of reasons people don't like it. You have things like the high fees, foreign currency stuff, the competition from all these players. But if you have a bet that, if you think that that's either overblown or you have conviction that the new management team is going to fix things or whatever it is, that the growth is going to get back on track, then it that makes it the difference between a value trap and an actual good value play. But there's such a fine line, because value traps and stocks that are actually great value, they both don't look great. There's always a reason the stock's going to be down.
Yeah, this is such a tough one to answer, because there's a very fine line between the two. And the reality is, if something is down 60 or 70%, there's probably some, every once in a while, I think, oh, Mr. Market's in a pouty mood and they're pricing this wrong. And then the other part of me is like, no, there's actually like 40 really brilliant analysts that have better data than me and have a sense that this thing is going the wrong direction. So I kind of teeter in between those. If it's down more than 60%, usually that means there's been some erosion in a certain key performance indicator for that business, most likely. So for PayPal, for example, the take rate just continues to shrink. And I think there's going to be continued pressure on that. Now, part of that's because they've had success with Braintree, which is just a lower take rate business in general. But I think they're also just getting hit from all sides competition-wise. So they're kind of in a tough spot. I try, for value traps versus value plays, I try to focus a ton on the competitive set. What are the trends going on in the industry, and where do I think they're positioned relative to their peers? For PayPal, I'd be worried. For Chegg, I think there's just been so much pushback from the actual education community on Chegg that they're fighting an uphill battle. I haven't really looked that closely at it in a long time, but I remember seeing that.
Plus AI.
Right, plus AI. I don't think the answer is a huge buyback program. If that's the company's default, like if you're not seeing improvement in the KPIs that really matter, but they're announcing giant buybacks, that's usually the recipe for continued underperformance, because they're having to invest more and more into the business and just buying back. Like, I like a buyback, but I like it on a business that's growing a lot more. So it feels like sometimes it's that meme of the guy where there's like that huge water tank and he just slaps on the like that tape and it's like
right.
Terrible business fundamentals, like buyback program, that'll solve it. And yeah, it's flex really tape, not the answer. Flex
football team. Yeah, exactly. And I would add here is that there's going to be a couple of reasons, or maybe just one reason, that a stock is going down a lot. And most people, because you can't cover every company, most people are going to read that narrative and go, oh yeah, that makes sense, that's why it's down. But if you're someone that follows the company closely, if you're someone that believes that you understand it and that you've know how this industry perhaps works, and again, 99% of people are not going to be as, like, if you research an industry, 99% of people aren't going to be as in tune with the industry as you are. And if you believe that the narrative doesn't match up with the actual reality, then there's an opportunity there. But it's a dangerous game. Okay.
Any other questions from the...
Yeah, we have one more. This wasn't from the chat. We had one on the watch list, which we can hit next. But here's one I thought would be interesting is what... and I guess relates to the watch list, actually. So, okay, yeah. We can double it up here. From Tyler. I think joins almost every week. So appreciate it, Tyler. I think it would be interesting to see you guys discuss what traits that your best and worst investments had, and then talk about some stocks from your watch list that fit those criteria. Yeah, I guess that inspired me to build the watch list. So I, again, have had a little bit of time to think on this, so I'll go first. Then Ryan can go. The traits of the good performing investments have been, they were cheap. From optically cheap, or on a 1 year forward basis, or maybe even 1 to 2 year forward basis, you could get a line of sight to it being cheap, meaning 10 times earnings, 12 times earnings, even cheaper, something like that. Where we got into trouble is finding stocks that were high quality, or finding businesses that were high quality, or even just decently high quality, but overpaying. And I don't even, I can never find any correlation between even at this moment, like what we would identify as good or bad management teams, which again is very qualitative or maybe not something you can bet on or find any insights on in the near term. I still think it's, you know, you want high integrity management teams, but the ones that did well is when we thought we found a high quality business that, you know, has the various, everyone defines a high quality business, I think, slightly different, but pairing it with a reasonable valuation. And then when I look at my watch list, the ones that I think excite me is to try to, yes, okay, I have 10, 12, actually maybe closer to 20 interesting businesses right now that I'm following, but having, forcing the discipline of saying, look, do not buy this unless you think it can trade at, I don't know, 12 times earnings, 15 times earnings, maybe 1 to 2 years in the future.
Yeah. Just thinking about the characteristics of the worst investments I've ever made, a lot of them were me believing that the margins could really expand. When you've got a business where it feels like if things go right, there could be tons of operating leverage, those can work. And I'm sure when they do work, they work out really well. But those are the ones I've been burnt on the most because the operating leverage just never really came. And it's a business that, or a management team that was maybe a little fixed in their ways and was just didn't really prioritize profitability in the short run. Now that's changed a little bit. Like the one I'm thinking of is Spotify, is really Spotify.
Well, Dave, isn't that just kind of, we bought a, cause we, I don't know what the actual numbers were, but when we bought it at a dirt cheap price to gross profit, I think it been a fantastic performer since the beginning of 2023.
Sure. Yeah. But since my cost basis from a long time ago, what did I do wrong on those investments? I think I was assuming margins would expand quicker than they did. There's been some expansion.
Okay. Right.
And then obviously overpaying. Yeah, we overpaid. And a lot of that overpaying was because I thought margins would expand quickly and we wouldn't be overpaying. So I was wrong there. The other thing, and this isn't really a characteristic of the worst investment. Well, not the worst business, but I doubled down on losers, and that's just a trait for disaster in terms of portfolio management.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
If you're going to have, like, if we're going to try this approach of buying a basket of stocks that I think will perform well, your winners should cover any losers unless you redeploy money from the winners into the losers. And that's kind of what I did. So I think I've learned my lesson there. And what's the saying from John Hempton? Losers buy losers.
I think that's someone else, but yeah.
I think it might have been John Hempton, but
He's stealing that from, I believe, Paul Tudor Jones, but maybe not. Someone, there's like something from the 80s where someone had that on their wall.
Well, yeah, that was probably my biggest flaw in the investments that have been the most successful for me, which, to be honest, there aren't that many. There are a couple. I think Sprouts Farmers Market was successful.
Nelnut.
Dropbox was successful. Nelnut's been moderately successful. Those were, like Brett said, ones where even if the business doesn't do that well, you can still see a path to a good return. And so it's like the upside is just cherries on top. Like if the business does turn things around, like with Sprouts, for us, it was as long as this business continues to generate cash at the level it is, it's going to be able to buy back a big chunk of its stock and the business actually improved. So you were getting, you weren't paying for the good results. The good results were cherries on top, which was nice.
Yeah. And let me look at some other ones that did well. Amazon, Alphabet. Now, Spotify from 2023 after we kind of exited and then came back in after doing a little bit of a tax write-off. I guess that doesn't matter for this discussion. Wix would be in there again after doing a tax write-off. I think all of those varyingly have decent high qualities there. But the fact that when we bought them at undemanding prices is when you have that margin of safety. And the outcome is a lot easier to, you don't have to have five things to go right to make money in the next 1, 2, 3 years, even if your thesis hasn't changed in the long-term revenue growth and unit economics of the business. I've had someone here, or you go.
I'll also say it doesn't, you know, it's not chance that this coincides with a bad valuation, but it was for a lot of the businesses where we bought at the right time, it was people had given up on the management team. People had given up on the company. There was just a general horrible sentiment around the company. I mean, with Amazon, it was, and it's kind of funny to look back on it now, but it's like, they're not going to be profitable delivering. They're not going to be profitable with deliveries, with e-commerce. Yeah. And it's like, they have shown you that they can do it. And it was this temporary swing. And we actually sat through and we looked at basically, why are they unprofitable? And I remember we looked at, okay, they double filled roles because of COVID. They bought up capacity too quickly and then weren't using it as much. Shipping was twice as costly. Fuel was twice as costly. Ground transportation, twice as costly. And all those things were something that we kind of thought could be temporary, and it ended up kind of helping us get comfortable buying a position. And so, yeah, I think when the narrative is, man, this company sucks, or man, they're doing everything wrong, it's the most uncomfortable time to buy, but those have proved to be the right times to buy for in my experience investing.
All right. Now let's go to, as we close out here, looking at my watch list today. I do have some more idiosyncratic ones on here that might not be fully included, but someone is asking, hey, what are you're looking at your current watch list. What do the characteristics of stuff that has performed well in the past, you know, make up of your current watch list, and maybe why are those included, or is there anything we can learn there? So I'm going to read through everything on here. First, just going through, I think the order I added them: American Express, Visa, Philip Morris International, Sprouts Farmers Market, Airbnb, Nintendo, Amazon, Alphabet, Harbor Diversified, Spotify, Autodesk, IAC, Nelnet, Coupang, Match Group, Adyen, and Ally Financial. Forgot to add them. Now, I think Harbor Diversified, Microcap, don't need to talk about them. Nelnet, IAC, conglomerates, don't think they're included. But when I look at two companies that fortunately haven't owned yet, but we were looking at owning in late 2023, but you know, then we had the fund closed down, is American Express and Adyen. And I think, again, I didn't actually get to have the returns here, which is unfortunate, you know, but I think we're getting better at, we'd followed American Express for a while, we'd followed Adyen for even longer. And when those got to much more reasonable prices in late 2023, and we were still confident in the long-term business prospects. They have done quite well. I mean, it's just been 6 months now, but I think American Express up 48%, Adyen up over 100%. I mean, those are a little bit unpredictable for such good short-term performance, but I think those are good examples of what I'm trying to look at in the future, and that's, fingers crossed, not guaranteed to be right. Hopefully what I'm seeing in Coupang and Match Group at the moment.
Yeah, it also helps when they have built-in inflation hedges.
Well, American Express is a...
And Adyen.
And Adyen are both nice. Both nice businesses. And I would say Nintendo I don't own today, but given where the stock's trading now and how... Yeah, it's gone down a little bit from a recent run. Either way, if I get some cash coming in, might add to them as well. Ally is another good example. Again, unfortunately, we don't own it right now. It's funny that, you know, we would be doing absolutely incredible in early 2024, but that's all right.
I own Ally.
You own Ally. There we go. I don't own Ally, but there, hey, at least one of us can make some money from it. We waited for a while on that one. It was a little bit hairier. We wanted a pretty big discount from when we'd buy. And then when we saw their competitive positioning stay strong, the KPIs we were watching were still doing well, besides some short-term headwinds from the macro environment. And we said, look, you can buy this thing at 0.6, 0.7 times book value. Should generate 10% ROEs for a bank once they normalize, at least, probably higher. I mean, that was a good risk reward, I think. And now someone like Ryan is benefiting from that.
100%. We have been going for 64 minutes though. So,
50, I'm seeing 58 on, the recording.
On YouTube Live, it says started streaming 65 minutes ago, but
I'm seeing, yeah. Well, when we recorded on the Riverside, I have a little counter here that we have 2 minutes left, but maybe not. I don't know. Maybe that's off. That'd be weird if that's off.
Anyways.
Anything else, Ryan?
No, I think we covered all our bases. It'll be fun to watch what happens with Trump Media Group. And yeah. I like when you ask for topics, but before the show, it helps. We can open with those next time.
Yeah, that's true. I think I'll, because not everyone joins right away. Yeah, I'll try to do it from Twitter and X. I'm even doing some of those posts that you can do now on YouTube as well for the people that don't follow on Twitter and X. Not the Elon fans, I would guess. But do you want to do the disclosure or should I?
I'm forgetting it, so I'll let you do it.
Okay, I'll give the things we say every time. If you like the show, follow us on either YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. That's where all the shows will be released. Give us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you listen to a full episode, we're hopefully giving you some value, either in entertainment or research, or maybe a mix of both. And the way to support us, the best way through and through, is to just give us a review on Apple or Spotify. Follow our show on Twitter. Follow us on Substack so you can get updates through the newsletter. Now to the disclosure. We are not financial advisors. Anything we say on the show is not formal advice or recommendation. Ryan, I, or any podcast guests may hold securities discussed in this podcast, may have held them in the past, and may buy, sell, or hold them in the future. Thank you, everyone, who joined us live on the Investing Power Hour, and we'll see you next week.